and in some way that these compromises and bargains are being made in each of your areas. The situation holds a problem in that it may put subsistence users of natural resources in a confrontation situation with sports fishermen and hunters in the state of Alaska, in view of the fact that the source, many people feel, has got to be used for one or the other purpose, and that there's not enough for both. No government agency for fish and game, whether federal or state, was rated by you delegates as capable of dealing with the job of managing Alaska's fish and game adequately. You said it. Cash income is seen as a need and a desire on the village level by village people. Availability of jobs, we find from a series of questions, could both stabilize the village in terms of local income, but perhaps deplete them of people if employment opportunities are actually found elsewhere. Migration and jobs are directly related. A significant portion of village people will see the development of village cash, the development of more cash income on their village level as a direct threat to subsistence life in the village itself. At the same time, a significant portion of village people believe that village corporation investments ought to be used to induce a village-based employment force. There's the feeling that a competitive corporate world of business can and should be married in some way to the village sense of subsistence, cultural beliefs, and native heritage and roots. But there's no inclination to hook up to the rest of the state of Alaska by a surface transportation method or access by roads into the rural areas. In the questions about corporations, we find a significant amount of dissatisfaction and satisfaction with the organization and the activity of all the corporations, whether they be village corporations, regional corporations, or nonprofit corporations. In most cases, 40 or 50% of the delegates responding that they're very pleased and favorable towards the initial activities of these corporations, and about a third of the delegates expressing questions and dissatisfactions. Of course, this has been a subject of your workshops as well. Village corporations, in terms of responsiveness, appear to be more responsive to their stockholders than regional corporations, you said. There exists a feeling that if the cash economy ever fails in Village Alaska, a people still active in subsistence living can and will survive. There's a feeling that by cutting village operating costs on the village level in the corporations and lowering expectations of immediate profit-taking, that the village corporations can survive without selling their land, which would be the same thing as surrendering a life, a culture, and heritage. There's a recognition by many that some land, however, is likely to be sold on the village level, and that this is a major problem to be considered. Government is seen, as a rule, as undercutting the subsistence way of life, the native culture, and village life. One means for altering this would be to have a regional nonprofit corporation's contract for the delivery of as many government services to village people as is possible.
Sure.
Finally, there was a wide endorsement of the idea of creating a major public affairs capability in AFN to identify and deal with statewide issues affecting Native people. That's my report, Mr. Chairman. I, of course, have a lot of data that supports these conclusions, which will come in my final report to you and then eventually to all the delegates. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mike. We're privileged to have with us today the Undersecretary for the Department of Interior, Mr. James Joseph. He was sworn into office as Undersecretary of Interior on March 23, 1977. Prior to that appointment, Mr. Joseph served as vice president of Cummings Diesel Engineering Company. He was born in Opelousas, is that right?
Close
enough. Louisiana, 1935. Mr. Joseph earned a bachelor's degree from Southern University in 56 and a master's degree from the Yale University in 1963. He began his professional career at Stillman College in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, where he was one of the organizers of a local civil rights movement. He is an ordained minister. He has served as chaplain of the Claremont College in California and is a member and was a member of the faculty of the School of Theology. Mr. Joseph was a first lieutenant in the United States Army from 56 to 1958, where he commanded a medical detachment and an infantry brigade. He has worked and traveled extensively in the Middle East, Western Europe, and Latin Americas. He has received many honors and awards and fellowships. So again, as what the undersecretary means, he is the number two man in the Department of Interior. I'd like to welcome Mr. Joseph with us.
Thank you very much. I had a high school speech teacher who used to tell me that there are three things one should always remember when talking to a group immediately after lunch. He said, first of all, you should stand tall enough so that everybody can see you. And then secondly, talk loud enough so everyone can hear you. And then thirdly, sit down fast enough before everybody falls asleep. The people in the Department of the Interior had a number of ideas about what I should say on this occasion, so that if I followed all of their suggestions, I probably would not be able to give proper attention to my commitment to brevity. So I will try and invoke some sort of compromise. I'd like to express my appreciation for inviting me to be part of your convention during this important and exciting time in the history of Alaska, and particularly Alaskan natives. I would also like to bring you greetings from Cecil Andrus, the Secretary of the Interior. The continuing challenge, both for Alaskan natives and for this administration, is to foster the kind of partnership the founding fathers of our nation envisioned in their efforts to form a more perfect union, to establish justice, and to promote the general welfare. As you have demonstrated in working with the Department of the Interior, the administration, and the Congress, the American Revolution was not so much an event in our nation's past as it is a process of fulfillment which leads into the future. The Alaskan Native Claims Settlement Act is an outstanding example of your sensitivity to what the fulfillment of our national goals requires. You have been most convincing in your presentations to the department. You have lobbied effectively in the Congress, and you have demonstrated exceptional skill in using the judicial system to block unwanted actions and to guarantee justice. One of the reasons you have been so successful is the fact that you have tried to resolve conflicts rather than intensify them. In a time when many Americans feel no responsibility to propose alternatives to the policies they criticize, the Alaskan natives have shouldered the full responsibility of advocating alternatives to policies they dislike. One of my favorite writers, Albert Camus, defined a true rebel as one who knows on behalf of what he's rebelling altogether as much as against what he's rebelling. I have personally been pleased to find that your representatives know not only what they're against, but also what they are for. We in the Department of the Interior appreciate this, and we are committed to maintaining the good working relationship which had been established with you and your leaders. Today, I want to give you some insight into the philosophy of the department and our approach to our responsibilities for Indian affairs. When Cecil Andrus was chosen to be the Secretary of the Interior in the Carter administration, he said that one of his first goals was to create the position of Assistant Secretary of the Interior for Indian Affairs. Last month, Forrest Gerard, whom you met this morning and who is a Blackfeet Indian, was sworn in as the first Assistant Secretary for Indian Affairs. The occasion was historic, not simply because it symbolized the changing of the guard in the Bureau of Indian Affairs, but because it reflected the beginning of a new era in the Department of the Interior. The days in which the BIA was in, but not an equal part of, the department is over. In the past, the Commissioner of Indian Affairs had to report to an Assistant Secretary and work through that Assistant Secretary to form policy or get needed action by the department. And the Assistant Secretary to whom he reported in the past had many other responsibilities. In other words, a spokesman for the Indian interest was not directly in the policy-making loop. Now we have included a spokesman for Indian affairs in that loop. Forrest Gerard now sits in the highest councils of the department, where his major responsibility is to represent the best interests of Indians when program and policy decisions are being made. We are fortunate that we have a Secretary of the Interior who fully recognized this need and who feels so strongly about the trust responsibilities of the department. We are also fortunate that Forrest Gerard was available to become Assistant Secretary at this moment in history. The process by which Secretary Gerard was selected, nominated, and confirmed represents a decisive break with the past. A new era in which we hope the future of Indians will largely be determined by Indian people. In selecting Assistant Secretary Gerard, for several months I consulted with Indian leaders to gather recommendations, and it was their expressions of support for and confidence in Forrest Gerard which led to his nomination by the President. Now that Mr. Gerard is on board, one of his first concerns is to deal with the long-standing and long-ignored organizational problems within the BIA itself. The objective is to come up with an effective organization to carry out the trust responsibilities of the federal government, to strengthen tribal governments, and to deliver services either through BIA programs or through self-determination mechanisms initiated by the tribes. To accomplish this, a task force with representatives from the NCAI and NTCA, as well as from the business and nonprofit communities, as well as from Alaska Natives, the Department of the Interior, and the BIA, will soon be reviewing the organizational structure. It also will consider recommendations of the American Indian Policy Review Commission and other studies relating to the way the Bureau meets its responsibilities. This is to be a comprehensive study, and the changes ought to be fundamental, not just cosmetic. But we also emphasize that changes will be instituted in an orderly fashion to minimize any hardships upon established relationships between Indians and BIA offices or on BIA employees. Now let me shift gears for a minute and focus on how the department views its responsibilities in regard to Alaska Natives in particular. We have a unique responsibility, a unique opportunity in regard to the human resources of Alaska. The relative isolation of the Alaskan Native from an industrialized society and the relative isolation from centers of government have enabled you to maintain some of the values and traditions you consider important. While Indian affairs policy of the government swung erratically from combat to neglect, from stifling paternalism to irresponsible termination, the Alaskan Native was somewhat protected by geography. This administration intends to treat Native Americans with the dignity and respect which is their due. The Department of the Interior intends to take its trust responsibility very seriously and to meet those responsibilities fully and directly. One of our most important trust responsibilities is to aid in the protection of Native subsistence. The department's willingness to be an outspoken advocate on subsistence issues was clearly demonstrated recently by our position on Eskimo harvest of bowhead whales. In my letter to the Secretary of State regarding the decision of the International Whaling Commission to ban the subsistence harvest of bowhead whales, I pointed out the serious impact this action would have on Alaskan Eskimos. I noted in that letter, and I quote, "Resource protection for the bowhead and cultural protection for the Alaskan Eskimo are mutually consistent goals, and in fact, cannot be achieved separately. Both the Eskimo culture and the bowhead whale are endangered, and we in the Department of the Interior would like to see them both preserved." Although the decision and the final analysis of the United States government did not reflect the exact approach recommended by the Alaskan Eskimos and the Department of the Interior, we are still working with other agencies to find ways to ensure that the hunt can continue. The desire for a quota is a difficult problem. It is my hope that some sort of numerical proposal based on need will be acceptable until we have better scientific information. We have been working closely with Eskimo leaders, and we appreciate the cooperative spirit, the constructive thoughts, and the depth of understanding which they have shared with us. We in the Department of the Interior have no jurisdiction per se over whaling, but we will continue to be an advocate for Eskimos among those agencies which do have this responsibility. The issue of subsistence, as with so many other issues in Alaska, is not one which can be resolved by applying across-the-board policies followed in the lower 48 states. Some creative ideas have been suggested. Clearly, we must have cooperation of Native, state, and federal agencies to achieve a system which will enable residents of Alaska to continue their traditional use of subsistence resources. As we made clear on our position on bowhead whales, the cultural and nutritional values associated with centuries-old indigenous populations cannot be ignored or subjugated to other concerns. In Alaska, we have an opportunity to avoid the mistakes of the past. The federal government has a unique opportunity to preserve rather than destroy the cultural integrity of its native peoples. Alaskan natives also have a genuine opportunity for self-determination. In my capacity as Undersecretary of the Interior and as Chairman of the Alaska Policy Group within the Department, I intend to do everything in my power to enhance that opportunity. I intend to foster sensitivity to Alaskan Native rights and needs among the Department's field staff in Alaska, as well as at the Washington level. I will encourage recognition of the fact that indigenous populations are an integral part of the ecosystems in which they live. I will strongly support protection of cultural and other subsistence values in domestic law and regulation, as well as in international treaties and agreements. Among the most complex and controversial issues that link the Alaskan Native to the federal government, none is more important or symbolic of that relationship than is the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. We believe that it is a matter of trust to ensure that Alaska Natives receive the full settlement intended by ANCSA in the most expeditious possible fashion. The department... We intend to make the department's technical resources available to Alaskan natives in such areas as resource development, resource protection, environmental protection, and subsistence protection. It is important for me to point out that we view ANCSA as a native statute. It is intended to promote native well-being. It is an historic agreement which in essence represents a contract between Alaskan natives and their government. Those of us currently charged with its implementation believe it must be fully and expeditiously honored. There is much to indicate that the early years of that implementation did not succeed in carrying out the bargain. But I believe that very soon we can reverse this history and recapture the meaning and spirit of that settlement. Assistant Secretary Guy Martin, an Alaskan whom you know, told Congress recently that the Settlement Act is first and foremost a native bill providing for a full and fair settlement of legitimate claims. He was speaking for all of us in the department in saying this, indicating that this is your settlement, primarily a native settlement, rather than a land act. It is also subject to the guidance of the trust responsibilities of the federal government. In this spirit, then, the Department of the Interior is undertaking a thorough review of the implementation of the Settlement Act, dealing forthrightly with the most complex and controversial provisions of the law. This review, being guided by Assistant Secretary Martin, has the participation, support, and confidence of your leaders, and we do not intend to violate that confidence. The review also has the constructive support and participation of the state, the Land Use Planning Commission, the Alaska Congressional Delegation, and others. The central thrust of our effort in this review is the conveyance of native land selections as soon as possible. All issues which affect this objective, even the tough ones like easements, are getting detailed attention. Ultimately, a wide range of issues affecting ANCSA implementation, including better federal management of the settlement, manageability, the 3E lands, land exchange, overselections, interim management, and others, will come to my personal attention and the Secretary's. By the first of the year, following full discussion with your leaders, the Department will be prepared to take a broad range of actions to finally make the settlement a reality. The desire of Alaska Natives to speed land conveyance perhaps goes hand in hand with the accelerating interest in self-determination. There is more interest in self-determination in this state than in any other area if we use the contracting of bureau programs as a barometer. In addition, Alaskan Natives are taking advantage of the Section 104 self-determination grants to help improve village and tribal governing capability. Although the progress being made in Alaska is good, there are several administrative problems to be resolved. One of these currently being addressed is that of tribal definition. The department has not yet taken a position on bills which are under consideration in the Congress. We are reviewing the testimony at hearings held in Washington on September 29th and the series of hearings held throughout the state of Alaska this past week. Our primary concern at this time is that we do not revoke the tribal status of an entity and at the same time make it easier to contract bureau programs. Ladies and gentlemen, I look forward to coming up to Alaska not only to see this beautiful state, but to see self-determination in action. The theme of this convention, does one way of life have to die so another can live is especially appropriate for this time and this place? The answer to this question, and I'm speaking not only for myself, but for the secretary, is a resounding no. One way of life does not have to die so another can live. The unbreakable strand which holds this country together is not common lifestyle. It does not matter whether we live in crowded tenements, whether we live in cozy suburbia, whether we live in tents or igloos or in houses made of bricks, sticks, stones, ice, hides, or steel. It does not matter whether we eat beef, dried fish, whale, enchiladas, rice, or whatever. It is not common language or custom or dress. What binds us together is a love of freedom and a respect for our fellow man, regardless of how different he or she may seem to be. It is what President Carter has referred to as our human rights, and that is what is most important. But we all know that to resolve our problems by simply agreeing that one way of life does not have to die so that another can live is not enough. In the past, this land we now call Alaska was so vast and so rich and so sparsely populated that there was indeed plenty for all, plenty of space and plenty of resources to accommodate various styles of life. There was relative isolation from the influence of growing populations, growing industrialization, growing demand for material goods. Today, a world growing short of natural resources and open spaces look with envy upon Alaska. Alaskan natives who only a generation ago had little concern for what happened outside their villages now find that they must be concerned about what is occurring throughout the world. Your culture has changed, some of it perhaps for the good and perhaps some for the bad. There will be more changes, and how you deal with it will be the test of survival for your way of life. You can retreat or isolate yourselves from the encroachment of population and technology. We have, in our D2 proposals, tried to protect and conserve a good deal of the most precious wildlife, cultural and scenic resources, but we have not attempted to lock up this state, and we see that rapid growth is inevitable. Your challenge, as leaders of Alaskan natives, is to seek ways of preserving the best of your culture while benefiting from the best of the modern technology. Whether your rich heritage lives depends to a great deal upon your determination and your wisdom in preserving your culture. I want you to know that you have friends in this cause. The Department of the Interior is committed to be your advocate. Will there be justice in Athens? His reply was that there will be no justice until those who are not injured are as indignant as those who are. The implication for us is that we will need allies for the struggle ahead. These are difficult times for Indian affairs. The national mood is somewhat as expressed by Art Buchwald in this morning's paper. But I want you to know that we in the Department of the Interior are just as indignant about injustice as those who are the direct victims. We are pleased that some Indian land thought to be worthless is now turning out to be very valuable. You may count on us to work with you to ensure that your interests is conserved and protected. We feel that we can do no less. Thank you very much.
As we did with, I'd like to say that, Mr. Secretary, it's been one hell of a long time since we've heard a speech like that. We've been waiting for a long time, and I've got a gut reaction that you're the kind of person who's going to help us produce, and we thank you very much. On
Alaska Federation of Natives, as we did with Secretary Joseph, with Secretary Girard this morning, we have a gift, an ivory carving on a plaque for Under Secretary Joseph.
Might be a cold winter in Alaska, but there are some warm winds blowing from D.C. Appreciate very much those remarks. Resolutions. We will then pick up with the business of the convention and proceed with resolutions. Dave, I think we're on resolution number 77-9.
Resolution number 77.
We'll have a little recess, but damn if we do, you know what'll happen. Nobody will come back. And I'd like to get the process over with. We beg your indulgence. We'd like for you to stay. Those workshop moderators who are going to give reports, I will be calling on you. We hope that, when I do call on you, please come forward to one of the mics to make your reports. As we announced earlier, all of the workshop reports will be made a part of the subsistence hearings that Representative Nels Anderson and his members are holding throughout the state.
Thank you, Byron. I'd like to ask the members of the subsistence committee to come forward and join me up at the front here, if they would. There's Representative Joe Hayes has been very patient, along with myself, and Representative Leo Schaefer from Kotzebue. Why don't you guys get your tails up here so we can get this thing going? I don't know who else is back there. Well, the gentlemen from that are members of the committee are coming forward. I'd like to say that I appreciate the opportunity to be here. This thing has turned out to be something altogether different than what I had anticipated in my little bush mind, but you'll have to forgive me for that. The Interim Committee on Subsistence is a committee that was established by the legislature this year. It was put together at my insistence because the state of Alaska, in my opinion, does not really recognize the deep need for subsistence hunting, fishing, and gathering activities in the state of Alaska. Members of the Interim Committee are Senator Pat Rohde. I don't know if he's still here or not. He is the only senator that's serving on the Interim Committee on Subsistence. Representative Steve Cooper, Representative William Akers, Representative Al Nakak, Representative Leo Schaefer to my immediate right, Representative Joe Hayes sitting right next to Leo, Representative Sam Cotton, I think, was in the area earlier, and myself. I think possibly many of you already know the purpose of the committee. The committee is to hear comments from the public in as many places as we can get to with a very limited budget to get the people's feelings throughout the state of Alaska on what they feel about subsistence. Questions that we asked were three basically. Should the term subsistence be defined? What do you feel about subsistence? What are your feelings about subsistence? And three, what should the state of Alaska do about protecting subsistence? At this time, I'll officially call the interim committee hearing to order, and we'll begin hearing the presentation that the Alaska Federation of Natives has prepared.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, we have during the last three, and we do apologize for the length of time it took us this afternoon. We hope that you understand. We're sure that you do. The AFN, during its annual meeting, has had a series of workshops in three broad areas, but they relate to the overall question of subsistence. They have to do with Native culture and lifestyle, the role of regional village and regional nonprofit corporations, and the whole role of state, local, federal government policy as they affect our lives. The entire convention, comprising some 800 people, actively participated in those workshops. The reports of each workshop will be done in writing will be made available to you, as well as the results of questionnaires on those issues that were filled out by members of the annual meeting also. At this time, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to call on the recorders and moderators of those workshops to give their reports. Is Rosita Worrell ready to report? Is Rosita here? Okay. Betty Miller? Is Betty here? Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Just for the record, I'd like, when I showed this slide this afternoon, I forgot to give the credit to Manilik Association, which they sponsored me in showing the changing world of the Arctic Eskimos. And that's Manilik Association that sponsored this one. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Betty?
My name is Betty Miller, and I'm a stockholder in Cook Inlet Region Corporation. I'm scared to death. We were told to give a synopsis of some of the things that we covered in our groups. And I think the feeling that I got from the groups that I attended was that, first of all, the Alaska Natives need to unite and to work as one unit toward one goal. If we don't do that, everything that we've worked for, there will be no problem of subsistence, because there will be no villages. That there, slowly the villages are going to go away because of poor management. No communication between the villages and the regional corporations. The training needs in the village are not being met by the regional corporations. There are language barriers that are not being met. There is no communication between regional corporations and village corporations. This came out very strong in all of the meetings that I attended. I think that most of the people felt that villages can survive on subsistence, but that a cash flow into the village enhances the life of the village. In other words, some villages could live just on subsistence, but money into the village helps them in buying sugar and flour. But the problem there is that they have to rely on supply and demand. If the airplane doesn't make it to the village, they don't have sugar. Or if their airplane doesn't make it, they don't have fuel to cook their food or whatever. I think that the thing that we got out of most of the meetings is that that we need to communicate more, not only among ourselves, but among people. It seems like that what we're talking about, our problems, are falling on deaf ears. And I noticed that the president of Cook Inlet Region did leave as we were about ready to make our presentation. And I feel that on a meeting like this, there should be stockholders, villagers, and regional corporations sitting down and talking together instead of being separated. Thank you.
Is Nita Corwin here? Nita Corwin? Rosita, are you ready? Okay. Rosita Worrell.
Can you hear me on this one? I did prepare a statement on subsistence based on my 2 years of experience in the Arctic Slope, and also on my own personal experiences as being raised in a subsistence-based economy. I will submit to you that statement. However, I would just like to give you a very brief account of what I view to be the important elements in subsistence. The three elements are economic, social, and cultural. The primary focus of subsistence has been on the economic aspect in the harvest of resources, and also on defining the boundaries within which those economic or subsistence activities occur. That's been the primary focus of all subsistence works and generally the subsistence legislation. It is my feeling that if legislation is to protect or ensure the maintenance of subsistence, then the other aspects of the social and the cultural elements must be taken into consideration. And in that respect, social aspects, I'm talking about the organization of social relations in which the harvest is secured. And in contemporary society, that social relations encompasses a relationship between the actual activities, the person who is going out, and also financial support. Now, that might sound like an economic, but the relationship is social in that groups of people go together to secure a subsistence harvest. There are two aspects to it. One, subsistence requires economic or monetary income. And that monetary income is secured in various ways, either by the person actively going out to work himself part-time, or else he may receive financial support from other members of his family or other members in his community. And in return, those resources are shared within the community. And so to legislate on a individual basis, my feeling, would be detrimental to the survival of subsistence. The other aspect of subsistence that must be considered in legislation is cultural. And the Athabascan case, which was discussed today, is a very good example of the cultural values of subsistence. And cultural is a very complex issue, and it deals with the psychological feelings of going out and being on the land, the continued relationship to the land, the manifestations of subsistence in your arts and in your oral tradition, in your literature. And those must all be considered. And I guess the final statement that I would like to say is that the fate of subsistence today lies not so much in the hunter pursuing his game in the field, but it lies on legislation that will either inhibit, restrict his activities, his or her activities. Thank you.
Is Doug Modig ready?
I've been accused of always being ready, but that's not the truth. We discussed and agreed and recommended that the following. Subsistence is a village way of life, both for bodily well-being and spiritual, emotional well-being. And since being deprived of a subsistence way of life would cause death of a valuable culture and economically would be impossible to replace, and if deprived would cause and has caused alcoholism and other kinds of disenabling activity. Education of the subsistence way of life should be keyed to the environment, utilizing native people on the local level. There needs to be a more clearly defined set of purposes concerning the regional, village, and nonprofit corporation, and setting up a clearly defined set of duties for each corporation. And more important, the corporation work cooperatively. We recommend communication between the corporations and people should be provided for. And ombudsmen serve a role as a mediator to communicate the business of the corporation and to communicate to the corporation of the people's wishes. The nonprofit could probably serve this role better. We also recommend a directory and informational booklet be developed as to what and who is the native serving corporation, and that booklet be distributed to the village people. In the past, the regional corporation have had self-serving roles in terms of advocacy. They have, as can be seen, served the best interests of the whole. However, for better services to the local community, the regional profit corporation should advocate more for human services since they have more available dollars and political clout. Alaska Federation of Natives has in the past served as a forum for general issues to be discussed at the convention. This has provided for better response to the people needs on a village level. They have also served as advocates for the solutions to problems of village people. This activity should be continued with more provisions for effective communication to village people. Recognizing that villages are distinctly different and that we are living in a grace period of no taxes and heavy competitiveness in terms of economic viability,
We suggest a set of alternatives be drawn up to meet the future needs of the villages economically and action be taken to issue a stable, to ensure a stable economic base. Two of the current bills facing the population of Alaska Natives directly are the D2 bill and the Senate Bill 2046. Concerning the D2 land bill, it is the responsibility of the Secretary of Interior to respond to the subsistence issue by writing in to amend the bill to address itself to the subsistence concerns in response to the native way of life in Alaska, utilizing face-to-face input and participation. Senate Bill 2046 does not, in our opinion, respond to meeting the needs of the native communities. It does not allow for implementing the right to self-determination. For local communities to become autonomous, there must be language in the bill to ensure the viability of local government control. Granted, there are some communities needing extra technical assistance. It is our position the only way to ensure self-determination of Native peoples is to clearly assist with the intention of establishing local autonomy. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Doug. Carl Jack.
Thank you, Mr. President. The delegates from the Association of Village Council Presidents during the last 2 days have met as a group to establish the region's position. Since the convention here deals with emphasis on subsistence, we have reviewed the resolutions that have been passed at the convention, have submitted those resolutions to the Resolutions Committee. We also have reviewed the results of the land conference that was sponsored by AVCP in August 4, 5, 6 in Bethel, and I have been directed by the delegates to submit, to present these the results of that conference. I will touch on the main important parts and will submit the written text to the committee here. First one dealt with the wildlife management. The adoption of the Soviet U.S. Treaty on Migratory Birds that allowed for the harvest of migratory birds during the current closed season based on need. AVCP also supports an earlier opening of the September 1 full hunting period for rural Alaska to allow AVCP villagers to legally harvest migratory birds for food in August before they leave the regions in abundance prior to September. The retention of management of marine mammals by the federal government and the retention of the native exemption as enacted by Congress. AVCP does not support the state of Alaska obtaining management control of the state, for the state refuses to regulate game based on need of the rural Alaskan subsistence hunters. AVCP would only support state management if sports hunting is clearly restricted when and where it interferes with subsistence hunting of marine mammals for food. The establishment of subsistence hunting zones for moose in the entire AVCP region, the elimination of all sports hunters. These hunters increase competition for the surplus moose and force rural villages to resort to illegal hunting during the closed periods to obtain meat for their families. Subsistence hunters must hunt legally, and the state of Alaska contributes to the crisis in moose management by continually declaring that urban hunters have the same rights to the limited moose resource as rural subsistence hunters. The elimination of the $500 permit fee for the hunting of muskox and the closure of muskox population to sport hunting when subsistence needs require all surplus muskoxen for local food. On fisheries, that the subsistence way of life be linked to management of regional fisheries, both within its rivers and the sea. AVCP desires that fishing of salmon stocks in the ocean by foreign countries must stop immediately, and that the Congress of the United States must take steps to recognize the importance of management of fisheries as an important part of the management of AVCP landmass as an ecosystem. That the AVCP be made an integral part of the fisheries management program of the federal government in a formal management arrangement as part of the regional federal land management program. The formal cooperative arrangements between the federal lands management and AVCP must exist. That both the federal and state government bring to the attention of AVCP proposed laws through a formal management arrangement for review. That the system of bartering of traditional food be allowed to continue without needless restrictions. That AVCP supervise all local development of fisheries with the federal and state government. That the federal government must refrain from disturbing the land where the fish spawn and the animals live to protect the region's fisheries and wildlife. On outer continental shelf, that all studies be fully completed before the decision to lift the suspension on OCS tracks is made, and that these results be shared at government expense with the villages, and that the villages are informed how the information was obtained. That AVCP and its villages have the power of local review prior to the initiation of studies while the studies are going on and in reviewing the studies. That AVCP be part of the management system on federal decisions to lease OCS where and when leases occur, and be involved in all decision-making in the operation and maintenance of the project to ensure a continuation of Yupik lifestyle. On coastal zone management, that before initiating coastal zone management in the AVCP region, that AVCP be notified and be given the opportunity for recommendations, for it is the people of AVCP who will suffer the hardships. That the federal government give money to AVCP to do the studies and education of the villages, and that these funds not be given to outside groups. That AVCP wants preference in contracting for local people because we know the information is best. When the government classifies its land, that AVCP have full participation in the classification procedures. On interim conveyance, reconveyance, and navigability. Reaffirm the decision of energy transportation workshop that we have there to wait for the land rather than be forced into accepting easements and immediate conveyance. People are concerned with the integrity of the land and the subsistence problems that can accompany many easements. AVCP is unilaterally opposed to public access to rivers and enclosed lakes because subsistence animals, fish and birds would be impacted. AVCP recognized that the Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act is not as good as was promised, and that D2 bill might be able to correct some of the bad parts of the Settlement Act, particularly sections dealing with easements and navigability. AVCP supports a definition of navigability that gives as much of the riverbeds as possible to the state of Alaska so that villages can receive high ground. There was a special concern at the conference on the issue of herrings. In the Eastern Bering Sea, the herring is an important subsistence fish to the coastal villages and will be an important commercial industry on the coastline in the future, with or without the village participation. In 1977, unexpected fishing success was achieved in the Togiak area by American Fisheries. A total of 3,200 metric tons was harvested in just 3 weeks, and a full season effort in 1978 could net someplace between 6,000 to 7,000 metric tons in Togiak alone. The state of Alaska supports the commercialization of herring as a renewable resource industry. AVCP does not support commercial fishing of herring but does encourage the villages on the coastline to join with Pistol Bay villages to establish the rules for the state and the federal government on this fisheries. The rules that could protect subsistence by establishing registration for gear, tonnage quotas, and mechanism to ensure village control and profit from the from any commercial herring fishing fishery. AVCP moves that the state and federal government must do a complete study of the eastern Bering Sea herring population for not less than 10 years, and all important information must be made available to the coastal communities. This study would determine the spawning sequence, the areas of distribution, seasonal fluctuation, age-sex ratios, fisheries management conflicts, as well as conflicts with set-net traditional sites for subsistence harvest in Hooper Bay and Nelson Island region. If the result of the study show that commercial fishing of herring would be detrimental to the subsistence harvest, then commercial fishery closure should be extended to the agreed-upon date. These are the most important parts that came from the land conference, and as directed by the delegates, I have submitted them to you.
Thank you, Carl.
Thank you much.
Thank you, Carl.
Is Evelyn Pete here?